Penguin Random House Audio presents The Swans of Harlem. Five black ballerinas, 50 years of sisterhood, and their reclamation of a groundbreaking history by Karen Valby. Read for you by January Lavoie, with Lydia Abarca Mitchell, Sheila Rohan, Marsha Lynn Sells, Carlia Shelton Benjamin, and Hadija Tarion McKinney G. For Ava and Zinnia, always. Prologue. At the height of the civil rights movement, Lydia Abarca was a prima ballerina for a major international company, starring in iconic works like George Balanchine's Agon and Swan Lake, Jerome Robbins's Afternoon of a Faun, and William Dollar's Le Combat. Critics described her as the dreaming soul of dance and a living ode to beauty, incapable of an ugly gesture or a false movement. She was the first black company ballerina ever to grace the cover of Dance magazine. She performed for queens and kings in the movie production of The Wiz and for Bob Fosse on Broadway. She was one of Revlon's original Charlie models, an Essence cover star, the object of affection for everyone from Mick Jagger to David Bowie, roses collected at her feet around the globe. Half a century later, during Black History Month, Abarca's 32-year-old daughter Daniela wanted to brag about her mother to their friends and family. She went looking for evidence of all Abarca had done, all the barriers she had broken, all the history she had made. But in researching the history of black ballet, she could find only stories about one young woman, Misty Copeland. Misty Copeland, Misty Copeland, Misty Copeland. The first black ballerina, insisted the internet. And indeed, in 2015, Copeland became the first African-American woman to be promoted to principal dancer at American Ballet Theater, ABT, breaking the company's 75-year record of whiteness. Thank God for Copeland's talent and her perseverance, for the breaking of poisonous runs. But why, Daniela cried, had her own mother been so thoroughly disappeared from the telling of Copeland's accomplishments? Just days later, Abarca's only grandchild, Hannah, came home from preschool in the suburbs of Atlanta, her head flooded with stories about the singularity of Misty Copeland. Four girls in her class had chosen the ubiquitous ballerina as the subject of their famous Black Americans project. Hannah had sat confused on the class rug, listening to how Copeland had been the first to kick down doors so that children like her could live more comfortably in their dreams. But what about Grandma? Hannah blurted out at the dinner table that night. Daniela was furious, unsure where even to direct her anger. Where's your name? She cried to her forgotten mother. Where's your name? George Balanchine, long considered the father of American ballet and the co-founder and artistic director of New York City Ballet, was famously said to prefer his ballerinas the color of a peeled apple. His apologists insist he was talking only about Suzanne Farrell, one of his most iconic muses. To this day, City Ballet has yet to anoint a black principal ballerina. But it was also Balanchine, along with his City Ballet co-founder, Lincoln Kirstein, who recognized greatness in Harlem's own Arthur Mitchell and encouraged his rise to become the company's first black principal dancer. Kirstein had been in the audience for Mitchell's high school graduation exercise at the School of the Performing Arts when he performed a solo entitled Whale, choreographed to Béla Bartók's music. Mitchell had lacked formal dance training when he'd been accepted into the school, relying instead on his exuberant sense of showmanship, auditioning in a rented white top hat and tails with a tap dance routine to Fred Astaire's Steppin' Out With My Baby, taught to him by a vaudevillian performer he'd looked up in the phone book. Throughout his time there, Mitchell withstood pressure from the school's administration, which pushed him toward modern dance. They said it was better for primitive peoples, he explained to a People reporter in 1975. I said to hell with that. I wasn't raised speaking Swahili or doing native dances. Why not classical ballet? Upon Mitchell's graduation, Kirstein offered him a scholarship to the School of American Ballet, the preparatory school for the New York City Ballet, telling the young dancer what so many successful Black people know to be true. Lincoln put it to me with brutal frankness, Mitchell said. He told me I would have to work twice as hard as anyone in my class. Mitchell entered the company in 1955, the same year an exhausted Rosa Parks was told to give up her seat on a Montgomery, Alabama bus. Some critics reduced a Black man in city ballet to a casting novelty on Balanchine's part. Some said worse. In his debut performance, Mitchell appeared on stage with Balanchine's then-wife, Tannequil LeClaire, in Western Symphony. At the sight of him, an old white man seated behind the conductor exclaimed, "My God, they've got a n*** in the company." Commercial television would hold out for years before it aired a performance of Mitchell partnering a white woman. But in 1968, he and Suzanne Farrell danced a pas de deux from Balanchine's Slaughter on 10th Avenue on the Johnny Carson Show. "And in living color, darling," he cheekily told a reporter afterward. Balanchine helped launch Mitchell into stardom by setting his 1957 abstract masterpiece, The Central Pas de Deux in Agon, on his lone Black dancer and the white Southern ballerina, Diana Adams. "My skin color against hers. It became part of the choreography," said Mitchell. His athleticism and technique were put to the highest test in a dance that was as sensual as it was intricate and austere. When a stagehand in the South balked at training the spotlight on a Black man, Balanchine told Mitchell to call upon the reserves of his own internal glow. Fellow City Ballet principal dancer Jacques d'Amboise remembered hearing Balanchine tell Mitchell, "You know, just make light brighter and don't worry." Mitchell turned the lights up in every room he ever entered. On stage and off, the force of his beauty and charisma hit like a wave. The man had key hooks for cheekbones and flash bulbs for teeth. He didn't smile. He shone. He didn't dance. He set a stage aflame. His Herculean work ethic and his preternatural gifts as a performer, coupled with Balanchine's favor, earned him groundbreaking agency over his career. He became the first Black premier danseur in history, a beloved international star who performed on classical stages around the world, on Broadway, in the movies. Everywhere he went, critics hailed him as the exception to the rule that Black people had no place in ballet. But where some might have rested, fat on individual achievement, Mitchell only looked outside himself, wanting to do more. In 1968, his career at City Ballet still going strong, Mitchell was under commission to form the National Ballet Company of Brazil in Rio de Janeiro, when news of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s assassination shook the world. The trauma ignited within him a sense of spiritual purpose. He was needed at home. He would build a ballet school in Harlem, the neighborhood that had raised him up. And because children deserve role models who show them what is possible, he would simultaneously establish the first permanent Black professional ballet company. Art is activism. Let the gorgeous lines of his dancers' bodies serve as fists in the air. When Mitchell's classes first started, in a church basement that doubled as a basketball gym, Lydia Abarca was a teenager living in the projects in Harlem with her parents and six younger siblings. She'd never had a Black dance teacher before. She'd performed only once in her life, as a fourth grader at St. Joseph's Catholic School, to a nun's choreography of Waltz of the Flowers from the Nutcracker. But as soon as she descended those basement stairs, Mitchell grabbed hold of her long, elegant feet and swept her into his tornado. Abarca was a girl who loved to dance, who wanted to be a star, who fantasized about making enough money to buy her devoted parents a house and finally move them out of the projects.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?